Purim. Today's subject is obviously something about Purim, but something that's not so visible on the surface of the story of Purim. We're going to start out by just taking a look at the origin, really, of the Megillah as a part, as the last sefer in Tanakh. And then we're going to look what Chazal say in their attempt to show us that Purim and the story of Purim as recorded in the Megillah really is legitimately a part of Tanakh itself. You see, when Esther wrote the story of Purim, she presented it to the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah, which was a judicial body that functioned in the Chorban times, in the beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. And they did not want to include the Purim story as part of Tanakh. It had not yet been decided that there would only be, as we know today, 24 Sefarim in Tanakh. And at that time, various Sefarim were really under consideration for inclusion in what would be considered Tanakh. Esther presented with Mordechai to the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah this story, and it was rejected first. After some persuasion, it was accepted as part of Tanakh. Now, the reason it was rejected is easy to imagine. First of all, it's not like any other sefer in Tanakh. They don't even mention Hashem's name. Okay. Secondly, there is no great... But Shirshim is written by Shlomo HaMelech. It's written in Nevuah. It's written at the time of Open Nisim and Open Nevuah. This is afterwards, in the time of already post-Korban, outside of Eretz Yisrael, a lesser, we would think, degree of Nevuah. So also, not only the fact that Hashem's name is not mentioned, there's no Nisim or prophecy, direct prophecy, Hashem speaking to someone to convey the Klal Yisrael, a message. There's no such thing in the Megillah. There's no open miracles in the Megillah. Every other sefer in Tanakh is either the story of a miracle, the story of a prophet, the writings of a prophet, the words of a prophet. And here it's completely different. And there's something else to consider. You know, sometimes you wonder why Purim, unlike any other holiday, you know, is celebrated in a way that sometimes degenerates. The celebration itself degenerates. It's not like Yom HaKippurim, which is like Purim. And, you know, it's interesting because the Nes itself, the way the Nes, the salvation of Klal Yisrael came about in the Purim story, is not the kind of Nes that we find honorable or appealing. I mean, if you think about it, the Nes came about, the salvation of Klal Yisrael came about by Esther, a pure, you know, innocent Jewish woman being forcefully, you know, thrown into the harem of somebody the likes of, you know, Ahmadinejad, okay, and having to use all kinds of methods, having a party, we have other names for those kind of parties, right, to basically not only convince the king, right, which is, seduction to some degree, but also have the king imagine that she and Haman have something going on and he's going to get jealous. Like, the whole nace is not the kind of nace that we imagine, you know, is to, you know, takes place in an honorable way. This is very unlike the other books of Tanakh. However, the message of Purim is not just part of Tanakh. It brings to fruition, it's the tachlis and the purpose and the end result of everything that was written before it. Chazal say it's a glimpse at Achris Hayamim. It's the culmination of everything in Tanakh. We keep Adar, Purim, always in the Adar closest to Nisan. And Nisan is the beginning, not just of the year, of Jewish history, of the whole story. And Purim is the end. It brings everything full circle. So Chazal see in Purim not just a part of Tanakh, but almost like the tachlis of all of it comes to what is learned through Purim. So much so that we know, a very strange idea, all Yomim Tovim are going to be batel except Purim. Now, what does that mean? I don't know practically what that means, but it means something about the importance of Purim. So, that being said, interestingly enough, this is a tefillah class. There are, my grandfather says in the Shema, on V'ksavtam al mezuzos beisecha, which I happen to teach today in my other tefillah class, which happens to coincide with Purim. I don't know, it always works out like that sometimes. But on the mezuzah, the halacha is that Megillas Esther and a mezuzah and the Sefer Torah have one thing in common in terms of how they're written. They're all on parchment, obviously, but they all have sirtut, those lines etched in with a knife, you know, before the writing starts. The halacha is that, like a Sefer Torah, Megillas Esther has to have sirtut also. So Chazal are saying that it's equated to a Sefer Torah. Now, in addition to that, where do they learn it from? Very important. We will get back to these words at the end. Esther, when she writes the story in the Igeres, the whole story and the letter she sends out is referred to as Divrei Shalom Ve'emes, words of peace and truth. And the Torah itself is referred to as Emes. And Chazal learned from here, Chachamim really instituted, I would say, that it be written in Sirtut, similar in form to a Sefer Torah. And they say, their reasoning is Ka'amita Shel Torah. Just like the Emes of Torah needs Sirtut, so the Divrei Emes and Shalom, which we'll also explain, of the Megillah, needs sirtut. So Chazal are establishing by this union that this, you know, comparison or that it's like the Sefer Torah. Interestingly enough, it shares something in with mezuzah, which also is sirtut. We know that mezuzah, you're supposed to notice it, take into account when you come and when you go, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is always protecting us, right? And the phrase we use to kind of describe that is, Hine lo yanum velo yishan, Shomer Yisrael. Hashem is the Shomer. And don't worry, whether you're coming or you're going, you're coming home to sleep, or you're awake and you're doing your work, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is never sleeping, always protecting you. Now, in the Megillah, there is a direct, well, no, indirect reference to this in the words of Haman when he presents his plan to Achashverosh. He says, Yeshno am echad, mufuzar mufarad, right? The word Yeshno, there is, Chazal say, read it, right? Don't read it Yeshno, read it Yoshein. Haman tried to imagine that through the Gullus was a proof, certainly that the 70 years were over, that they thought this was a proof that Hashem had fallen asleep, so to speak, was no longer directly involved with Klal Yisrael. Yes, Hashem allowed it to look like that temporarily. Why? You know why. We've spoken about it here. Hanukkah time, we've spoken about it in a couple of ways. Hashem withdraws not because he's rejecting us. Hashem is giving us the opportunity to speak, as we say, on his behalf through our Mesiras Nefesh, through our commitment, instead of Hashem breaking open the heavens and speaking on our behalf, right? Hashem is going silent so that we become the primary players in bringing the awareness of Hashem to the world and the reality that you cannot destroy Klal Yisrael or the Torah or their connection to it. So, Haman says, oh, he went to sleep, he's not involved with Klal Yisrael. Yeah, it did look like that for a while, just to shake up Klal Yisrael, to get us to do what we had to do. When did Hashem decide to now end the little, to open up their eyes, so to speak, and make it clear that all of this was just to mobilize Klal Yisrael? Balayla hahu, nadada shnas hamelach. That's when the whole thing turned. That's the pivot point of the whole Megillah. The night that the king, Hashem, decided to make it clear that he wasn't sleeping, and everything starts to turn around. So, the mezuzah, which is Hine lo yonam velo yishan, and the Megillah, both Sirtut and Rabbeinu Tam, even though that's not how we hold, says only the Megillah and mezuzah, not Torah, but we do with the Torah also. These, they all are connected. So, we have the mezuzah, which is certainly min haTorah, right? It's from Devarim. And then we have Torah itself, and Megillah, and the concept of Hine lo yonam velo yishan, all come together to prove to us that Megillah and the Purim story are rooted in Torah. Not just rooted in Torah, they are the culmination, the end goal, the achras hayamim of Torah. More than that, my father, you shall live and be well. By the way, if you want to listen to a shiur from my father, who has in most unusual personality, exuberant, enthusiastic, charismatic, magnetic. My father is really very unusual, terrific. He is on Torah anytime. Rav Yosef Schwab, and he has a gazillion shirim, and he's a lot of fun to listen to. And a lot of interesting stuff. So he pointed out to me just now on the way here that the Purim Megillah has 166 psukim. Both accounts of the coming of Amalek in Torah, the one in Bashalach, Vayavo Amalek, and the one in Kitetze, Zachar, have 166 words. Megillah has 166 psukim. Again, direct. Here's more. Once Chazal decide to, they want us to understand that Megillah is rooted in Torah, so they go through a lot of, they give us hints by asking us, right, Haman min haTorah minayin. Exactly. So, this is Maseches Megillah, it's Amud Bey. So here's where we talk about Mordechai and Esther. We just did this. Mordechai, where is he from in the Torah? So, here's it says, Chazal bring down here, Gemara brings down, that Mordechai is Nikra Rosh Lekol HaBesamim. It's the first of all the Besamim. What is this reference to? Mor Dror and Kisisa, the first in the Ketores. And Targum says that Mor Dror, he explains it as Mari Dache. Okay? That's Mordechai. So, from the Ketores. And we mentioned the Ketores a few weeks ago, remember, with David HaMelech? We're going to go back and go way deeper. So Mordechai is one of the spices, the first spice in Ketores. Okay, what about Esther? What was her real name? Esther. What's that? Myrtle. The tzaddikim are referred to as hadassim. They have a beautiful smell, right? Yale hadas. Let the myrtle arise. Zu Esther hatzadeka shenikra hadasa. As it says, vahi omen es hadasa. Right? So we have a concept that Esther reminds us of the hadassim. Hadassim are one of the mitzvahs. Right? There's also a reference. Now, chayav adam libsume bepuria. How do we normally translate that? Drink. But what does besume mean? Besamim. It's related to besamim. What that means is a person has to become intoxicated with fragrance on Purim. So wait a second. Chazal are telling us that Mordechai is rooted in Ketores. Esther, that's in the Torah. It's already in the Torah. Esther is rooted in also a perfume smell, also from the Torah. A person has to become intoxicated with fragrance, whatever that means, with smell, which Ketores is the Mizbeach, that the Mizbeach, brought the concept of smell to an avoda. Also, right, what is all this about? Where there's that we're linking Purim to Torah Shebichsav through this concept of smell. Wait. Rhetorical question. Not looking for an answer yet. Now, Haman min haTorah minayin. You all know this. Hamin ha'et. So let's put all the pieces together now. Haman is the arch enemy, the worst, the total destruction, evil incarnate. Where does Haman come from? The Eitz Hadas Tovara. Whenever we go there, that's the beginning of all things, right? Where does Esther and Mordechai come from? And Chayav Adam Lupsume, that's the perfection of the sense of smell. Everybody knows that when we speak about the perfection of the sense of smell, we are making a reference to Kodem HaChet. Why? Because, first of all, when Isha speaks about, because she's not called Chava till later, when Isha speaks about, when the woman speaks about how enticing this tree is, she talks about, she hears from the nacha, she sees with her eyes, she imagines how delicious it is, but she doesn't get involved with the smell. The smell never gets tainted. The smell never gets diminished through the sin. Vayipach ba'apo nishmas chayim, the neshama and the neshima of a person are connected. There's something about smell which Ketores, as we said, turns into an avoda, which represents a perfection of the state of man, a kodem hachet status. And when we speak about Haman, we're speaking about the ultimate negative result of the sin of the Eitz Hadas. Now, take it to the next step. Not yet. Now, take it to the next step. Okay, number one. When does Misa come into the world? Death. Bayom Acholcha Mimenu, the day you eat from it. Most Tumas. Did they die that day? It means the concept of death. Who do we call the messenger of death? The Malach Hamavis. Okay. Now, here is a very interesting medrash. This is Ramesha Shapiro, you know, he is pulling away the curtains. He's pulling away the veils. He's pulling off the layers, revealing the most astonishing, profound things in the Midrashim. It's really, so many of the great, Balei Machshava today are working off of Maisha Shapiro's stuff, his ideas, what he's teaching. He teaches continuously. It's astonishing. And I can't tell you personally how many basic Yesodos, I've gained. Sometimes I'm learning this and I stop and I say, I cannot believe what I just read. It just like opens up doors and, things you knew but you didn't quite understand. So here's where Maisha brings down, this was in Parshas Tetzave 5:7-6:8. So he brings down, he's talking about Ketores, the origin of Ketores, okay? It's going to be directly linked to the Malach Hamavis. Malach Hamavis is post-eating from the tree, post-Eitz Hadas. Smell, perfection of smell, neshima, ketores, the avoda of the smell, the elevation of the sense of the concept of smelling, is kodem hachet. Believe it or not, who is the source, so to speak, of the ketores? The Malach Hamavis. So the Medrash says like this, Moshe went up to Shemayim, and there an entire, I think we mentioned this, right, a couple of weeks ago in passing, a little argument ensued. We're not going to go through the whole thing, because each word in this Medrash has deeper meanings, but the Malachim put up an argument and said, leave the Torah up here in heaven. Why in the world would you give the Torah, which is your will, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, your will, your Ratzon, into the hands of human beings who you've created with free choice, therefore they can violate it, they can desecrate it, they completely ignore it and abandon it, they can manipulate it, talk, rework it in their own terms. Why would you do this? So Hashem said to Moshe, answer them. Moshe answers, and the Malachim are so, they find Moshe's answer so compelling that they accept it. The Torah must be brought down to earth, and they give Moshe gifts. And what we're going to focus on is this, the Malach Hamavis, okay? The Malach Hamavis gives him a gift. Ah, Malach Hamavis Maser Lo Davar. He gives him something, Shenemar, as it says, Vayitain Es HaKetores VeYechaper Al Ha'am. He gave him the Ketores, the secret of the Ketores. And it says, Vayamod ben hamesim uben hachayim. You know what that's a reference to? After Korach, there was a big magefa and everybody was dying. Aaron takes the Ketores, runs out into the camp, and holds the Ketores, and the magefa stops, and there's a division between the dead and the alive. Like, the Ketores divides. The Ketores establishes life. So what we're saying here is this yesod. And it's a fundamental truth, and you see this exhibiting itself on many, many levels. There is a concept called being alive, which is represented by the Ketores. It is represented by this sense of smell. When the neshama is firmly integrated in a person, they, so to speak, are alive, which we experience through inhaling, right? Think about it. When somebody's faint on Yom Kippur, you don't show them a bright color or make a loud noise, you give them smelling salts. When a person experiences something overwhelming that gives them a sense of something greater than themselves, like you're standing by the Grand Canyon, look around, people close their eyes and go, right, they want to inhale it. There's a certain life force, something greater than yourself. The concept of smell, ketores, being alive, kodem hachet, all these ideas go together. Why do we consider ourselves alive when we speak about kodem hachet? Because Kodem Achet is the state of man that is completely attached to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and if Hashem is eternal, man is eternal, there's no concept of death associated with that. The strange thing is that what we're learning from this Medrash is it's the Malach Hamavis that gives Moshe the Ketores, which is trying to say only through overcoming death do you feel fully alive. Go figure. Why do people jump out of airplanes? Because the thrill of almost dying gives a person a charge that they're really alive. That's why people go, all kinds of expressions, that's why people indulge in some type of, when they're bored or feel half dead, intense negative emotions. As long as they are suffering and then they can feel that, then they know they're alive. People hit themselves, God forbid, and people are spiritually or psychologically feeling dead. They actually do really scary things, cut themselves and things like that, just to feel alive. Interestingly enough, what this Medrash is saying is that overcoming the Malach HaMaves is how we achieve, acquire, and experience living, fully being alive. Now let's take it further. The Malach HaMaves, what is that? What is the Malach HaMaves? So, what is a Malach? Let's go back to there. The Malach is really basically the word of HaKadosh Baruch Hu expressed in this world. Now what we mean by that is this. When we say Hashem speaks, Vayidaber Hashem, right? We know God doesn't have a mouth and a tongue and lips and a whole speaking apparatus, right? So when we say speaks, what do we mean in God terms? Well, when I'm speaking, the whole point that I'm going through this effort for is to convey to you, the listeners, an idea that you will now grasp. So it goes from my consciousness into your consciousness, and now you understand it. You receive it. Maybe you act on it. Okay. When we say that Hashem speaks to us, or speaks, by Yomer Hashem, what we're trying to say is that Hashem is conveying His will, His Ratzon, to the world, to the Bria, to humanity, and we hear it. We hear it. Every Malach is just another way of saying, Vayidaber Hashem. Hashem is conveying something to the world. Therefore, unleashing a force in the world, which is Hashem's speech, which is called a Malach. So here are proof texts for that. Kol Dibur, as Gemara says, Kol Dibur V'Dibur Sheyotze Mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nivra Mimenu Malach Echad. So Gemara straight. Every word that Hashem utters creates a Malach. What that means is, when Hashem conveys His will to humanity, that unleashes a force into the world. The will of Hashem is a force in the world. And that's what we call a Malach. They're all the same idea. Now, for example, when we say the Malach Rifael, what we're trying to say is that Hashem willed that part of the nature of this world is that there is a healing force. People heal. We don't instruct our body how to heal. It exists. There's a force. It happens. It happens to us. It happens out there in nature. In the world, there is a force of healing, of rejuvenation, of rebirth. It exists. That's the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we experience it. That's called the Malach Rafael. Okay? When we speak about the Malach Gavriel, you tell me what that is. Hashem is created in this world, and we feel it in ourselves, the concept of Gavura, of power and of strength, to pick ourselves up again, to go forward, to rebuild, to not lose hope, right? To hold back, to restraint. That's a great aspect of Gevurah, is restraint. That force that exists, not just in human beings, it's a force that exists in nature. Greatest proof of all, if you can release the atomic energy that is held inside the bonds of one atom, all of that energy is held inside the bonds of that atom. You break those bonds of the electrons and the neutrons and the protons. You, in one atom, you could destroy the planet. I mean, not really one atom. I'd say all the atoms in a dime. That's all you need. The atoms in a dime. You will destroy the whole planet. That is Gevura, restraint. It exists all over the world. That's called the Malach Gavriel. Therefore, what is the Malach HaMaves, which gives Moshe the secret of the Ketores, in other words saying, the secret to being alive, truly, what we call Kodem Achet, attached to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, untainted by sin and death, right? Why is it the Malach HaMaves that conveys its own, teaches us how to achieve life, and in a sense, it's teaching Moshe how to overcome it. It gives Moshe the secret of how to neutralize it. The Malach HaMavis is the force in this world, obviously, of death. It is associated with the Eitz Hadas. But it doesn't just mean that we all die. That's death on its most basic, simplistic level. There are many other forms of death that people experience every day. There's spiritual death. There is emotional aspects of death. Psychologically, okay, people do engage in behaviors that are self-destructive, right? They make them feel horrible, want to die, make them hate being alive. Self-destructive things, things that will cause other people not to preserve their own life, not to preserve the person, not to care if that person's life is preserved. We do very self-destructive things that cause us anxiousness and frustration and self-loathing. We are also self-destructive. Now, there's a million things to talk about the Malach HaMavis. Freud discusses it. He calls it the death wish in every person. It's expressed watching horror movies, have a fascination with death and destruction. More than that, laziness, lack of initiative, paralysis, hopelessness. It's all part of the death wish that a person just wants to give up, be dead, not be alive, not be accomplishing. That's Freud talks about as one of the primary forces in man, and he's 100% right. And we speak about it using other words. We call it hiskapsus, pulling into oneself and holding back, sheva al pasa, not doing anything. Right? That's all aspects of it. Now, this Malach HaMavis, this force in the world that we experience outside of us and inside of us, is associated, has its origin in the eating of the Eitz Hadas Tov Ra. Haman min HaTorah Minayin wants us to know the final expression, the poster child for the evil that could come from the eating from the Eitz Hadas and the death that ensues from that. You want an example of it in real life? Haman, who is the Malach HaMavis, obviously, and everybody like him. All they want death and destruction of the whole wide world, of the masses, of whole peoples, of everybody who opposes them. But in the end, the Malach HaMavis, which they represent, the force of death they unleash, destroys them. Who destroyed Haman? Only himself, and you know this, 5 or 10 different ways. He made every decision that destroyed him because he was, so to speak, the highest example of the concept of eating from the Eitz Hadas. So let's go back. We have to go back to the Eitz Hadas. Now, talking about the Eitz Hadas, we've done it here a little bit. I mean, it's a mountain that we're going to just touch the tippiest top of the iceberg here. Start like this. Everybody knows that the story of the Eitz Hadas takes place in Sheishis Yimei Bereishis. That's a fundamental piece of information, because when we start counting time, we count from the seventh day, Shabbos, when they're out of Gan Eden. Okay? We say the world is 5,771 years old plus Sheishis Yimei Bereishis. Could Sheishis Yimei Bereishis be a billion years? Of course it could. There's many articles, my grandfather included, who write on this subject. Besides being many, many, many years, besides the fact that it accounts for why, for example, you see a light, you see a star, and you see the light from a distant star. Now, we know that light travels at 186,000 miles a second. And we know, with our Hubble telescope, that that star is 100 million miles away. The sun is just a star, but the reason it's our sun is because it's our closest star. It's only 92 million miles away. It takes the light of the sun to reach us 9 minutes, which is why, by the way, if you're in an emergency, there's a super-duper secret 9 minutes after Shkia, right? I don't know if you heard about that, right? Because really, that light is reaching us 9 minutes after it left the sun, because it travels at the speed of light. But if you have a star that we know is 100 million miles away, well, when did the light leave that star? Not 5,771 years ago. Can't be. It left that star in Sheishis Yimei Bereishis hundreds of millions of years ago, okay? So the point is that that whole time, that whole era called Sheishis Yimei Bereishis is not in our dimension. It's a whole different existence. More than that, on a spiritual level, we speak about the Ar HaGunas, which only functioned in the Sheishis Yimei Bereishis. Now, the Ar HaGunas, the Ar HaShchina, the Ar Reserve of the Tzaddikim, What is that? That means that there was a phase of existence which we never experienced. Because once we came out of Gan Eden, we were already post-chet, beyond 6 days of creation. We're already in our time. In the 6 days of creation, where this chet takes place, the whole story takes place, we are living in a totally different dimension of existence, which is characterized by Or HaGanuz, which means that the Or HaShechina permeated the world, like the sun permeates the physical world today, the Or HaShechina permeated the world in equal measure. That's what Rambam says, pre-chet, okay? When Rambam speaks about the Sheishas Yimei Bereishis and the pre-chet experience, reality, he speaks about it as a world of pure emes and sheker, total truth, because the Shechina permeated the world. Now, everything that takes place in the Sheishas Yimei Bereishis, which is not part of our real-time existence, is described to us in the Torah for a very important reason. Because we don't live there. We don't have any connection in a real practical way to that existence. So why is it described to us? And be very careful. Rambam says in the Morne Vuchim that Maaseh Merkava, Yechezkel, seeing, describing what was going on up there in the heavenly spheres, which nobody would take literally. And you read Tupsukim and you say, I don't know what this is talking about. I can't wrap my mind around this at all. It's describing the Srafim, the Ophanim, and the Chayus, and the wings, and the whole thing, and the Shira, and the fluttering, and the chaos, and the... We don't try to understand the Maaseh Merkava in any literal sense, in any simplistic sense. Rambam says, Maaseh Bereishis, which means the account of all the things that take place in Sheishas Yimei Bereishis, is exactly the same as the Maaseh Merkava, and it should only be taught, which I don't know why we don't keep this, but I guess we have to learn from it, to, like we teach Maaseh Merkava and other Divrei Kabbalah, secretly to one student, it's in a whole different realm. However, Mefarshim deal with the whole story, and we try to learn the lessons on our level of the story, but we have to know that the story of the Eitz HaDaas, being that it takes place in Sheishas Yimei Bereishis, is revealing to us the deepest secrets, profound truths, that we must have some understanding of because it precedes our existence. We come into this world. As soon as we have self-awareness, we start asking questions. What is the purpose of man? Why do we do the things we do? How does our mind work? Why do we have certain, why is everybody different, personalities? Why do everybody react differently? Why do we, we need a handbook to explain to us ourselves. And you know what? Millions have been written. Millions of books trying to explain people to ourselves. Now, did Hashem just throw us in here without giving us some type of handbook? Some type of guidelines? No. What is described in Sheishas Yimei Bereishis is what those stories, all of those ideas, all of those concepts that are described as existing or taking place or coming into existence in Sheishas Yimei Bereishis are there to tell us that these are the fundamental truths that pre-exist your life and history. These are basic fundamental ideas, realities that are kavua, deeply established in the nature of the Bria. You have to know them, not just nature out there, but human nature. The story of the Eitz HaDaas is giving us a glimpse of human nature so we understand it by the time we hit the ground, so we can hit the ground running. By the time we're out of Gan Eden, this is already kavua. It's already what we need to know about ourselves, about how we operate, about our tachlis, about what we're supposed to be doing. So, understanding that, then only through that perspective can you go back and try to understand what is being taught us through the chet, the story of the sin of the Eitz HaDaas. Don't forget, once we start real life, we've already eaten. We do not live in the pre-chet status once we start living in real life. We achieve that experience of kodem ha-chet, of sheishas yimei bereishis, and matan Torah, for a moment. But it doesn't stay with us either. It's just a moment. So why is that whole state of man described to us, the whole pre-chet state of man even described to us? Because it's really giving us a glimpse at the light at the end of the tunnel. It's telling us what we're here to achieve. Gives us a picture. This is the ideal state of man. This is perfection. This is the goal. let me describe it at the outset. But then once you start real life, you're not there. You've already eaten from the tree. You're already after the chait. You're already in the real world. That is what we're working towards. And Chazal say Purim is the story that started way back. The pre Adam and Chava Kodem Achet. Purim is Achras Hayamim. It's where we get back there and say, through Purim? How? How does that relate? Now, so Rambam formulates the difference between pre-chet and post-chet, what we call kodem achet, which we said is associated with purity, neshima, smell, ketores, total being alive, and post-chet. Okay. Pre-chet, Rambam says, is described, you know this, that the way man operated, our understanding of the world was strictly through the prism of what? MS and Sheker. What that means was, man was completely objective, which is another way of saying that what was right and true from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mind, so to speak, is exactly the way man thought. What was right and good is how what we saw to be right and good. There was no dichotomy between Hashem's perspective and our perspective. That's called MS and Sheker. It was either pure MS, and if it wasn't, it was easily recognizable as Sheker. Look, how many right answers are there for 2 plus 2? How many wrong answers are there? And infinity, right? Okay. Are there differences in the wrong answers? Like if I say to you, 2 plus 2 is 4.00001, or 2 plus 2 is 18, which is more of a lie? They're the same. Either it's MS or it's not MS. And man is capable of seeing pure MS for what it is, and they all, and that MS fills their mind and their heart, and it's their yearning and it's their desire, and they see it as the only thing worth putting an effort to acquire in this world, and the only thing of value, and all they want to do is be attached to it. Is this the same as saying they have no bechira? Yes. Okay? There's really no bechira. It's like you go to the top of the Empire State Building, and somebody says, you know, you have a choice. You can take the elevator down, or you could jump off. That's the state of things, okay? There is no real bechira. That's the perfection of man, and now you're going to ask me, but that's perfection. Okay, so at the end we'll understand. That's the perfection of man. That's the highest madrega. That's when mankind is completely attached to Hashem. We see things with our eyes are truly open. Not the opening after the chait, but our neshama eyes are open. We see MS, and it's our desire, and it's the only thing that drives us and that's worthy of acquiring. That's the Madrega Kodem Achet, formulated by the Rambam as MS and Sheker.
Can I just
say, stop, wait. Just wait. We'll get there. And she's not Chava, she's Isha, and that's important, and we'll get there. And she did. This is describing, take it out of the realm of a man and a woman who had one mitzvah, and they goofed, and we're all suffering, okay? The story of the Eitz Hadas is the story of mankind. What is our perfection? Where is our weakness? How do we fall? How does it happen? Isha, by the way, I'll give you a secret. As Rambam explains, the whole Mishle that talks about the woman, Isha is what is called the visceral hakara of a person, is referred to as Isha, what we gut desire and feel and know is called Isha, and what we learn abstract knowledge is called Ish. And Rashi says right away on Nachash, there's no talking snake. Rashi says Zu Yetzahara. It's in here. So Isha is not just a female. Isha represents the female drive in a human being, which Rambam goes to great lengths in the Mora to discuss. That the drive in a human being called Isha is the gut, intuitive, you know, sense of what's true and what's false. And you'll understand what we mean by the fall of man now. So, pre-chet is a clear awareness of Emes and Sheker. And on your point, the awareness doesn't just come from what we know, which is called the Ish, by the way, the male, through our learning, through our observation, through facts. But knowledge also comes from inside the person. What we gut know is true. There are certain things that we know automatically is true, and we'll get to one of the fundamental ones soon. That's called the Isha, knowledge that comes from here. Okay? Now, both are united in a single desire and drive to be attached to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the only thing clearly worth pursuing, investing any effort in. That brings us happiness. That's that's emes, and that's shalom. Right? The Megillah talks about divrei shalom ve'emes. The sense of peace and truth that comes from attachment to the emes of the world, to the eternity of the world. That's the perfect state of man as described in Kodem Achet, which we do not exist on and we never did. Okay. But it's what we're attempting to achieve through our own hard work. Now, what's the reality? The reality of how man operates is described through the story of the tree. Without going into it in all the detail, but I have a few hours of this online. But the end result is that Rambam says, after eating from the Eitz Hadas, Tov Vara, you know this is not the first time you're hearing this, right? They began to see the world in through the categories of not Emes and Sheker, which is objectivity, but Tov Vara, which is subjectivity. My good is not the same as your good. Why not? I'll tell you why not. Because each person is a unique combination of all kinds of different factors. So I have different parents. I've had a different education. Different influences have worked upon me. I grew up in a different neighborhood. I was born in a different generation, into a different country. I have a different personality, different abilities, different talents. So how could my perspective possibly be the same as your perspective? So there's an individuality. And therefore, we see things our way. What's good for me, because of my combination of factors, is not at all necessarily good for somebody else. Correct? It's obvious. So the tree of knowledge is the concept of subjectivity. Is everybody automatically subjective? Of course. Just like every face is different, Chazal say, Gemara says, every neshama is different. So of course we're subjective. So we already understand there's a certain subjectivity. Now, what happens when the I, which we've spoken about, right, the ani, the identity, the self, the, you want to call it the ego, the sense of me, sees a situation, and I respond to it according to my individuality, my experiences, my perception. Okay? That's called subjectivity. All right? But there's also HaKadosh Baruch Hu's truth. Now, there's always a conflict. How am I going to see this? In terms of MS, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says is MS, versus my limited, it's always limited because we are not the whole world, my limited perspective. Eating from the Eitz Hadas is the ultimate sin. It's the reason for every bad choice we make. We're all eating from the Eitz Hadas all the time. Eating from the Eitz Hadas is another way of saying increasing, attaching to, giving legitimacy to our subjective opinion, okay, our perspective. That's called eating the Eitz Hadas Tovara, making it one with us, not seeing it as, that's my opinion, but I'm objective. I also know Hashem's opinion, and I'm not, you know, I'm not swayed. I'm going to choose. I'm not caught up in mine. I'm free to choose Hashem's truth. Right? That's being separated from. But the more we eat from the Eitz Hadas, the more our perspective is entangled, becomes completely impossible to, disentangle. Right? From our way of seeing things. We become so blinded, so utterly blinded by the way we see things. How they must be this way. And I've got to react this way. And I want to react this way. That we lose ourselves. And we choose something that reflects strictly our own subjective view on the situation. Our own desire. Our own reaction. And we completely forget that we have an option, which is to disattach, not to eat from the food of the Eitz Hadas right then and there, and be able to see things from Emes and Sheker. Remember, there was another tree in the garden. What was that called? The Eitz HaChayim. And what do we say? Eitz Chayim He? Right. So the Eitz Hadas is the Eitz of death, Misa. The Eitz HaChayim is the Eitz of life, correct? Where, by the way, Haman hung on a tree, right? So when we eat from the Eitz Hadas, we are basically choosing death, because everybody knows that when we respond completely subjectively, according to the way we want to see things, how we think is right, without taking the big picture into consideration, without taking the MS, the Torah, the Halacha, the true perspective of HaKadosh Baruch Hu into perspective, we'll always make a mistake. Then those death forces kick in. Guilt, frustration, hopelessness, we hurt other people, right? If we, in all bad midos in the world, come from an over-attachment to the ani, to the self, to the eitz hadas, to the subjectivity. Let's go to a fundamental idea. We're going to go way through. Is that okay?
Yes.
Let's go through a fundamental idea. We say everybody is born b'tzelem Elokim. Let's try to concretize that. Really concrete. Something you can feel. Something that comes from here that you don't have to learn. You just know it. Okay, we have a lot of expressions of descriptions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Gadol, Gibor, Nora, Emes, omnipresent, everywhere, right? Makom, all-knowing, Ein Sof, everything. Chai, alive. But when we as Jewish people want to choose a single word that incorporates within it all the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what's the one word we choose? The word we teach our children first and the word hopefully on our lips as we die? Echad. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Okay, Echad doesn't sound very, sensational. You know, okay, we know there's not two. Echad means more than just one and not two, even though that's fundamental, of course. Echad is the shoresh of miyuchad, unique. Yachid, singular. Okay? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one of a kind, completely unlike anything else. Okay? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is perfect and all-knowing and all-chesed and all-controlling and the source of all things and the life force of all things. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is miyuchad, totally unique. And this whole Bria is simply the self-expression, you might say, right, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem is one, completely individual, fully expressed, you might say, and expressed really only to the degree that we help Hashem be expressed in this world, but could be fully expressed and certainly worthy of our total devotion and worship. Now, doesn't every single human being feel exactly the same way about themselves? Every single person feels, I am unique. I am not interchangeable. I matter. It matters if I'm in pain. And we wouldn't say we're worthy of being worshipped by everyone on earth, but we would say that we are worthy of being taken into consideration. And if somebody, a coworker or a child or a spouse or a friend or a person on the street acts as if we don't exist, you know, completely offends us, takes advantage, disregards, whatever word, we are deeply, deeply wounded. Where does that come from? The Tzelem Elokim. The aspect of a human being that is directly connected and similar to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is not our bodies, not our thoughts, because they're so limited and incorrect, not our emotions, which are all over the place. The part of us that is directly similar to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the feeling of Echad, Miyuchad, unique, worthy of being taken into consideration, not disposable, okay? I matter. I have something here that I can contribute, and that's why every person has a desire to express themselves in their own way, whatever that way is. That aspect of a human being is called the Tzelem Elokim of a person. It's the Ani. Now, here is the whole thing. All Bechira comes down to this Nekuda. Everything is between Kodem Hachei and Achrei Hachei. The whole story of the Chait is describing this concept. When a person confronts any particular situation, okay, they see it their way. And their way is unique, is worthy of consideration, and they feel that, kavod, it's a sense of self-worth, kavod. By the way, nefesh, Rav Moshe Shapiro points out, he speaks about this a lot, the nefesh of a person, the word nefesh is interchangeable with the word kavod, ura kavodi. Self-worth, importance, individuality, right? The person feels that. But we know we have that. We know we have a sense of self, a sense of the I, all right? What happens, though, when we're confronted with any particular situation? We have one or two choices. We can either respond the natural way, because we all live after the chait, we've all eaten from the tzedas, we do it every day of our lives, hopefully less and less as we mature. But we can either go the natural, automatic route, which is that we respond according to me, or we disattach a little bit, become more objective, and choose to attach ourselves to the Eitz HaChayim and choose what's the right response based on Torah, not just Torah, everything, Machshava, Midos, Perkei Avos, Halacha, the whole thing, right? And choose to express Hashem's truth through us. Now, that second option is really the secret to what the Megillah says, Divrei Shalom ve'emes. The second option is emes and shalom. Because if we're attached to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, we know that although we are expressing ourselves, because each person has their own way of bringing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's truths into this world through the same mitzvahs and through the same Torah, but different chadushim from different people, different ways people do the mitzvahs, different mitzvahs that people really get into as opposed to other mitzvahs that work with their personality, different aspects of Torah that different people like learning. You can learn, gain knowledge from dikduk, from halacha, from historia, from gematrias, from philosophy. There's a million different mefarshim. They all are going in different directions, learning truths. And there's a lot of different ways for each individual human being to be very unique, but they're still expressing truth. They're using their individuality, their tzelem elukim, but it's attached to the Eitz HaChayim. It's attached to truth, and therefore what's coming through them is worthwhile, purposeful, necessary, as we said. It's a funny way to say it, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu has basically put his fate in our hands. Hashem will only be known in this world to the degree that we make HaKadosh Baruch Hu known through our choices. There was a time where Hashem broke open the heavens and showed everybody, I am Hashem. But that was when we were young and we were being taught. But now, the last 2,500 years, it's not like that anymore. We lost the prophecy and the miracles, not because Hashem, as we said, is retreating. Hashem wants it to come through us. That's a great status for a human being. So Hashem's truth, through my individuality, comes to the world. So now a person knows a few things. I have worth. I have the most important job in the whole wide world, which is to make Hashem known. And it's attached to truth. So I have emes and shalom. Oh, that shalom that everybody's looking for. How many millions of books have been written, philosophical, psychological, on how to achieve happiness and peace. Inner peace comes from knowing that you are a tzel milkim and knowing what you're supposed to do with it. That gives a person inner peace, and you could be walking to a gas chamber. You know that through your death, you will prove to the world that they cannot destroy Klal Yisrael or the Torah or the attachment between the two, and your death will help prove that message because they could kill 6 million. The more the merrier, chas v'shalom. But the more they try and don't succeed, the more it proves it. So each death is part of that lesson. So there's a sense that through my life and death, I am establishing emes in this world. So there's a sense, believe it or not, of some type of tachlis, the satisfaction of having a tachlis in your death, as opposed to being mugged for a gold chain. There's a tachlis in a death. That's why a lot of people move to Eretz Yisrael, and they say, well, if I'm going to go here, at least I'm going because I'm a Jew in Eretz Yisrael. It's a lot better than, you know, some petty crime, you know, taking someone down or whatever. So the concept is this. Now, you would think that if it's so fundamental to a person, that intuitive knowledge that I'm worthy, I'm a Tzelem Elokim, I'm unique, I matter, and we get so offended if somebody threatens that. Where does all the Lashon Hara come from? The hatred, the jealousy, the anger, the kas, the hopelessness, the depression, the obsessive desire for certain things, all because they threaten my sense of status, of importance, of existence as an important, unique individual. If that thing is expensive and I own it, I'm unique. And if I can't have it, I could get obsessed about it. Whether it be an object or a career or an accomplishment, an achievement or a degree or whatever, or a person. And furthermore, if somebody wounds our sense of uniqueness and importance, that's it, done. That person is very often, you know, on the hit list forever, right? So that comes from a human being, Selem Elohim. But here's the thing. You would think, this being the case, that if a person is truly one of a kind, unique, a musician, a famous doctor, an artist, a poet, a dancer, a celebrity, a model who's the most gorgeous woman on earth, and everybody recognizes their uniqueness, and they have fame and fortune and money and women and men and worship and everything, you would think that their tzelem Elohim, their sense of self uniqueness, is firmly established and rooted and secure, right? But what happens? You've seen it. We've seen it way too many times. Depression, forms of self-destruction, drugs, alcohol, craziness. How many are in rehab, right? And suicide. The greatest, the ones with the most potential, are usually the first to go down. In fact, psychology books will tell you that those with the greatest abilities are often the most depressed, the most, in discomfort. What does that come from? Because there's a tremendous sense of Tzelem Elohim, and it's anchored to nothing except itself. So it's swinging in the wind, not anchored to anything true or eternal. The person is not an expression of anything greater than themselves. They're only an expression of themselves. And if the world is about me, then it must be a pretty pathetic world, and they become very hopeless, and they don't feel any connection to MS, to anything true, and they'd rather die than continue to live in that kind of pain. And by the way, in case you're interested why so many Jews run off to Buddhism in the East, Buddhism is a 2,600-year-old discipline that has made an art form, invested enormous energy into solving this problem. How miserable a person is, because they're attached to nothing besides themselves, and therefore their identity is their, what they call, afflictive states of mind, anger, hatred, jealousy, depression, obsessive desire, pain, suffering, etc. And they have developed a coping mechanism, which is not a Kadosh Baruch Hu and mitzvahs, but detachment in the Himalayas, somewhere on a hill, and then they're very happy. And they are happy, but that's not the solution. Okay? Yes. We're getting there. We're getting to Purim now. Now that we've established, okay, the concept of the Eitz Hadas, this is the culminate. We're rounding it up right now. The Eitz Hadas is the descent into total subjectivity. The ultimate expression of this is Haman. Haman is the poster child. He sees everything only from his own perspective, which, as we said, is synonymous with death, destruction, self-destruction, Malach HaMaves. It exists in Haman, the villain. It exists in the Amalekis, which are non-salvageable outside of us, so we don't know who they are. But it really exists inside every person, the eating of the Eitz Hadas, the self-destruction that takes place, when we opt to simply respond to ourselves and our own perspective, not attached, not anchored to the Eitz HaChayim. If we anchor to that, we are alive, we have Shtivrei Emes V'Shalom, and we are, in a sense, Kodem HaChet, and we are, in a sense, utilizing our koach haneshima, smell, ketoras. So Esther and Mordechai, which represent the ketoras, basically overcoming Haman, who represents the Eitz Hadas, death and destruction, is the story of our day-to-day struggle, but it's also a glimpse, as we said, of Achris Hayamin. In the end, Chazal say, the miracles of the ends of days are going to overshadow and make the miracles of Pesach, the beginning of the year, Nisan, the Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Midbar, all of that, they will pale in significance to the miracles of the end of days. But the miracle of the end of days is going to be a Purim-like miracle. No big, dramatic, demonstrations of God's might. What that's saying is this. Through the course of history, one nation after the other, one Haman after the other, one subjective view after the other of how to live, how to set up your life, how to make yourself happy, how to get everything you want out of the world, one opinion, one subjective etadas opinion after the other. Different governments, different kingdoms, different empires will come and go. And who will be left standing by process of elimination? Who's the only one that's still here? Klal Yisrael, who are Esther and Mordechai, who are the Neshima, the Eitz HaChaim, the Ketores, the Kodem HaChet, the sense of being alive. That's what remains standing. In the end, Hashem is not going to break open the heavens and destroy the Rishayim. They will self-destruct under their own weight. Their own subjective perspective will destroy them, one after another. And if they don't wake up and see this pattern, they will follow the pattern. Those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it, right? It's amazing to us that Ahmadinejad, who can live in this modern world where information is completely accessible to everyone, in a web of delusion that there was no Holocaust and he will succeed in destroying Klal Yisrael, when everyone before him failed, even in his own town, 3,000 years ago, right? 2,500 years ago, right? He is living in a web of delusion. By the way, all of these megalomaniacs and dictators who are completely subjective destroy themselves. Look at Saddam Hussein and all of them. They live in a web of blindness and delusion because their own army generals will not tell them that they lost the battle. Because if they tell them they lost, what happens? So their heads will be chopped off. So they'll never say, we need better weapons. Our soldiers are not trained. We lost. They'll never say that. So they imagine, before the age of all this information, that they're winning. That they're right. That's, they really believe it. It's total self-destruction not to know the big picture, not to know the MS. When we have the MS, we are attached to life, and we remain standing, and Sheker, Haman, falls apart by itself. All of that, boomer, and I'll end with one last point, and then you'll ask your questions. When something is dead or decaying, like a piece of meat, right? When you have a piece of meat in front of you, how do you determine if it's alive, fresh, or dying, decaying, rotting? The sense of smell determines for us if something is alive and fresh or something is decaying. And you know, there's no more offensive smell than something that was alive and is now decaying, right? Disintegrating. There's nothing more offensive. Dead animals, dead flowers, waste product of a person. Decay that comes from life. When there could have been a potential for life and instead there's decay, that is the most offensive smell. And what is the most pleasant aroma? Something fresh, a baby, a flower, or apple pie. Our nose tells us, is it alive or is it dead? That's the secret of the Ketores, the secret of Mordechai and Esther, the secret of achieving the Madrega of Emes, attachment to Tzachayim, Kodem Achet, the secret of what will come to be the simple, obvious awareness of the whole world in Achras Hayamim, that there is only one Derech, that's Emes. Everything else destroys itself. So there's really no point in putting in the effort anymore to do anything other than what's right. And all human beings will now see themselves as fully actualized in their individual expression of the eternal, original, one single MS. Okay, stop. Now, okay. Questions, yes. Okay. Which, no, I'm talking about the underlying, no, all we're saying there is, that in the Purim, there's so much to it, but the Purim story, in that the Nes comes about through this in an unappealing way, is really, I mean, the fact that Esther had to do this, Esther had to use their methods to get to them, Sheker, death, had to be, you know, in a sense, the knife in the heart of Ahasuerus and Haman had to come about through their own perverse methods. Because they didn't see the truth, they were brought down by their own choices, both of them. 1 second, because I know you have a lot of questions. Say, any other questions? 1 second, yeah. Say it again. The Malach HaMavis, when you say created, Hashem says that when you eat from the Eitz HaDas, you will die. That's when death came into the world, which is another way of saying that's the origin of the Malach HaMavos.
Can we have 3 minutes?
The force of death. Yes, 3 minutes break. I'm going to get you in. Yes. Come up front. Unless you want to hear questions. I have cold water.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yes.
My pleasure. Yes.